Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Red River Gorge is a beautiful, huge park full of wildlife, rock climbing, waterfalls, dense forest, gorges, and stunning views. This place feels genuinely isolated and disconnected from the rest of the world. One fall evening, my boyfriend Dee and I decided to go camping at the gorge. We found a campsite that was pretty close to the river. The sites were pretty spread far from each other as it was, but we made sure to get extra far. Our site was on the edge of a steep drop-off. We arrived at sunset and quickly set up camp. By the time we were fully set up, the sun had set, and we began to make a fire. About 20 minutes into the relaxing by the fire, we heard howling that did not sound too far away. We were both freaked out by the realization of wolves being nearby, but we tried to not overreact and to continue to sit by the fire calmly. 10 minutes later, I heard a faint yelling from about 15 feet away, past the edge that we were sitting by. I told Dee to be quiet and listen, and we both froze out of fear. We could hear a woman screaming. It was hard to hear at first because of the river, but at one point, I couldn't make out any words, but it was like a resounding guttural shriek, a noise I had never heard another person make in my life. Then I heard it. She was screaming,
"Help me! Somebody please help me! Oh my God, someone please help me!"
And repeating this repeatedly, howling at the top of their lungs. I was terrified. She could have been turned around in the dark and fallen off the cliff into the water. She could have been attacked by the wolves, a bear, or bitten by a snake. We both sprinted to my car, frantically climbed inside and locked the doors. I tried calling the police, but I had no service. I threw the car in reverse and sped down the dirt road to find anyone that could help, and the shrieks continued the entire time. I didn't make it far before coming across a group of 3 young men standing on the edge of the forest. I slowed down and cracked my window, still hearing the woman begging for help, and asked the men if they listened to it. How could they not hear it? I told them I heard a woman crying for us in the forest, and 2 of them sprinted into the darkness without even questioning me any further. The other one just stood by my car, assuring me he had no idea of what was happening. While the other 2 men were in the forest, I drove farther down the road until I found a spot to turn around. When I came back, the screaming had stopped and the men were back by the side of the road. I slowed down and asked them where the woman was, and one of the men that had run into the woods answered,
"Don't worry, it's funny. It was just a little kid at a campsite further down the trail. He was having a nightmare."
I just said okay and drove away as quickly as possible. We left the campsite and went straight home. Once out of the woods, we called the local police station multiple times with no answer. I know it was not a child. I have never heard such a primal, fearful scream in my life. It makes my skin crawl and my heart race to think about it. What did those men get away with that night? What was I witness to? Hello, Swamp Dweller. My name is Alex, and I was born and raised in Iowa. I'm 36 years old, and I love your channel. Now, as for my story, I can't even call it my story per se. I'd be surprised if no one else has submitted this locally well-known legend, if you will, about Matzell Bridge. It is in rural Linn County, Iowa, about 15-minute drive down some back gravel roads from where I live. It is prevalent and well-known. It's been told over many generations. There is, allegedly, a haunting at this bridge. Sounds stupid, I know. But it's just a very well-known story. No matter who tells it, or what age or social status, it is always told the same way with the exact details. No joke. I'm never into this type of stuff, yet it intrigues me due to my own experience. the creepy legend of this old metal bridge that spans the Wapsiminikon River. Legend says, if you stop your vehicle on it, no matter the direction you are driving, something pushes your vehicle the rest of the way across until you are wholly and safely across. Allegedly due to a school bus that was supposed to have crashed or gone off said bridge into the river many years ago. The bridge is 100 years old. It's an old school lane-style metal frame bridge that only exists in the Iowa gravel boonies, as we call it. I always called BS on these stories. It's not even scary, until you live it firsthand. It was a snowy Iowa winter's night, black only interrupted by the snow itself, but it was not windy out this night. We stopped my 2001 Pontiac Sunfire and turned off the engine, in the cold, silent night. I kid you not, an invisible entity pushed us slowly across the bridge. I say go because my girlfriend Megan, nor my best friend Floyd, exited by car. I say ghost because my girlfriend Megan, nor my best friend Floyd, exited the car. Yet when we left miles down the road due to us freaking out, there were child-sized handprints all over my car's back window, bumper, and tailgates. They were all different sizes but small enough to be children's handprints, pushing my car. I don't know how to describe this other than, well, I can't. But I would like to thank these good kids for looking out for our safety, as that's why they do this. So, other bridge crossers don't meet a fate like they suffered on that same bridge. A strange local myth, but as a sane 36-year-old man with a family, I'm telling you, it's 100% true. And cool in my opinion. I hope you find this worth sharing with the swamp as it is. Thanks, Swamp Dweller. Keep informing people and keep the people safe. A few years ago, my friends and I went on a 45-mile, 3-night kayaking trip down the Green River in Kentucky, which runs above the Mammoth Cave System, the world's most extended known cave system, for more than 400 miles of surveyed passageways. We brought everything we needed in our kayaks, in one canoe. We had food, tents, water filtration, the whole likes. We had planned to camp each night on the riverbank when it started getting dark and we found level enough ground. The first night was rather uneventful, except to say that there was nothing like a wall of fireflies against our mountainous black tree line at night in the middle of nowhere, which was absolutely serene. On the second day, around sunset, after a long day of kayaking and baking in the July heat, we came upon a stream on the bank that opened into a large ravine. As we discovered, the stream was a cave spring pouring out blue-cold cave water in a lagoon about 30 feet wide, and so profound that the blue water turned black after a few feet. The lagoon had long sandy beaches, secluded by hills on either side, and a tall overhanging cliff behind and above us. It was beautiful. Otherworldly peace. Time moved very slowly there, or so it seemed. We decided to camp there for the night. The sand was soft, white, and very fine, ideal for ground sleeping. The place deeply frightened me for some reason, but I didn't speak up. We were all tired and everyone was having fun. We built a small fire and enjoyed the stars through the leafy canopy for a while before everyone went to bed. I slept hard that night. At around 5 a.m. I woke up with the urge to relieve myself. It was still dark out, and I had the tent zipper about halfway opened and just popped my head out. I heard a loud, terrible roar or scream in the distance. I immediately recoiled back to the tent and zipped it closed, and I waited. The scream came from about 10 feet to my left, near the dwindling fire. It was high-pitched, but not like an owl's screech, although I'm not ruling that out. It was a wretched, pained scream that got lower-pitched at the end. Since we were in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, it was most likely a fox, boar, or a bird. Whatever it was, I lay awake for an hour listening. I heard absolutely nothing else. Granted, we were on a soft beach, but I didn't hear a single twig snap or leaf crinkle when whatever it was finally shuffled away. It was truly bizarre. I should mention, at this time, that up the beach and off to the lagoon was a small dry cave opening. It was maybe 3 feet wide. I cannot say with any certainty that it was not some ancient, cave-dwelling creature that surfaced to investigate our camp.
I somehow fell back asleep and awoke the following day shaken. I asked if my friends had heard the terrible scream, but apparently, no one had. We pressed down the Green River some more. On the third night at dusk, we came upon a large rocky beach. We pulled our boats ashore and decided this would have to do, as we didn't want to go any further down and risk being stuck on the water at dark. This rocky beach was where the river split in two, and in the middle formed a collection of pale rocks, tall grass, and dried-out wood. A lonely pile of muck the size of a football field. The landmass was covered in jumping sand spiders and tiny frogs. Again, otherworldly. We set up camp, ate, and we all went to bed around the same time. I'm not sure how long it was silent for. Maybe 20 or 30 minutes. I was asleep, as the others most likely were as well. Suddenly, my dream was interrupted by a booming, loud, mechanical wooden beat. I awoke and shot straight up. It was indeed the loudest thing I'd ever heard. It sounded like a massive bulldozer tearing down a colossal steel and wood building. Then came a boom, followed by its echo throughout the river valley. The animals shifted. The birds flew away. We were all awoken by the crash and yelling and confusion. Nothing but silence followed outside of our tents, and no one was particularly willing to shine a flashlight towards the woods. Eventually, we all decided it was just a falling tree and went back to sleep. The following day, I thought about it some more. It did not just sound like a tree falling. I must stress it, it had like a metallic quality to it, and it projected purposefully. It almost sounded like a roar. In the morning light, we found no evidence of anything out of the ordinary, nor any fallen trees that could have made such a loud sound. So we packed up and headed out onto the river one last time, and headed home. My friends and I still talk about that trip and all the weird things that happened. We even made the same kayak trip a couple of years later, and nothing out of the ordinary occurred. No mysterious forest noises, and to my disappointment, no weird creatures. In 2012, when I was 17, my friend and I decided to go running along the river in Sacramento, California. It was a beautiful afternoon, and we decided that we would run along the portion of the river that was denser with trees and bushes and explore the area. After jogging for about 2 miles along the path, we decided to enter the trees and walk through the heavily forested portion. Only about 20 yards into the heavily wooded walk, things became creepy very fast. My eye catches something in the tree, and I insist to my friend that we should check it out. As we make our way over to the tree, I realize it's a hand-carved, painted, wooded chicken figure that had been nailed to the branch above the trunk. As we look at the tree, we notice a tent structure to our left that has been built from various tarps and other cloth-like items. At this point, we realize that someone occupies this place. A chill runs down my spine, and our instincts tell us that we should leave as soon as possible. We immediately decide to walk back to the path through the trees we came from. We get back on the trail out of the trees and head back to our car a few miles back from where we started. As we walk back, my friend feels a presence behind us and proceeds to turn around to check. Now I'm still looking forward to the path ahead of us. Immediately as my friend turns around, he yells, and I turn my head to see what is behind us. Roughly about 15 feet behind us is a figure wearing a black hoodie with the hood positioned so the face is shadowed and has a large machete in their hand. As I look down at the arms of the person, I can tell that this guy has been out here for quite some time. I'd have to estimate there were at least 10 inches on that blade sticking out of the sleeve. The hand was not visible though, so the blade could have been much longer. Our adrenaline immediately kicked in, and we sprinted as fast as we could to get away. After running for a few minutes, we saw that this person had eventually gave up and ran back into the trees, but he followed us for at least 200 to 300 feet minimum. When we got back to our car, we called the police and they searched the area for the man. To this day, we talk about this story. I'm unsure if the police ever found him, or whatever came of that guy, but we never hiked on the river in those woods again.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's this river near a quiet part of town. The water's calm, and you can drive on top of it in the winter. I go there when my mind runs, and I can't find the quiet anymore. One night was different, though. This night, I was alone at the river post breakdown, and was lying in the back seat of my car. My friends and I fought over something I honestly don't care about anymore months later. I sat and stared into nothing. In seconds, all the cars around me in the parking lot had left. No warning or noise. They were just gone. I sat up and looked around. The smell from outside was almost painful, sour, and chemical. Like that smell you'd get in high school chemistry when you didn't listen to your teacher and put your nose in the beaker. I looked at the once clear water, which had turned rusted and wasted. The cars had somehow gotten across the river to the forest, and all the people stood there staring at me. They didn't move. They barely even breathed. They just stood there. I didn't leave my car, too afraid at this point, but I did try to turn it on and leave. It was stalling repeatedly. I went to start it. I had gotten the check engine light of my car. In a panic, I checked out my info chart and saw what was wrong because I didn't trust the outside. Nothing. No flat tire, no issues with my battery, not even an oil change. Surprisingly, I reached in the back of my car for my phone. And it was working. Message after message started sending. All unknown numbers, all telling me repeatedly that I need to get out. I looked out my window again and jumped back. All the people were now standing in a circle around my car with phones in hand. I realized I had been crying at this point and rapidly tried to start my car. It took me 5 minutes before I gave up and crawled into my back seat sobbing. I'm not sure how long I was back there, but I noticed the smell was gone and heard people talking outside my car. I sat up and saw all the same people in their cars. The water was evident again. I have no idea how to explain this experience. I still go there, but not at night. I'm still unsure what happened, if it even happened. But knowing me, it probably didn't, and I probably entered some sort of psychosis. But it was still terrifying. I haven't told anyone before now, because I don't want people to judge me. Like I said, I don't know what happened. I don't know if anyone else has had to deal with this, and deep down, I crave knowledge. Hopefully, somebody listening to this might have an idea of what I experienced out there. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true river horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. The more likes this episode gets, the more YouTube promotes it in the algorithm, and that's very, very helpful. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcast or Spotify, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating over there as it helps the show grow on those platforms. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new episode, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, whether it's a river story or something different, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp, as stories like yours help keep this show going on a daily basis. If you're on the go but don't have YouTube Premium and still want to download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories no matter where you are, you can download them absolutely free. From Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, and just about anywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. If you'd like to support the Swamp outside of that, maybe check out the merch store. I've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. I'd love to see you guys wearing some cool Swamp merch. Be sure to join me over on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't forget to join me in the Discord with the other Swamp Dwellers so we can chat. And let me know in the comments down below what story tonight was your favorite. I'd love to get a discussion going. I'll see you all soon with another creepy episode. Hello, Swamp Dweller. My name is Tristan. I'm a female, and when this took place, I was 16 years old. Before we get into this, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm incredibly superstitious and incredibly spiritual.
I have a long history with the supernatural, starting at a very young age. Well, with that said, let's dive right in. This all took place in late winter on a reservation in northern Nevada. So, don't think of cacti and sand when picturing this place. Imagine more mountains, snow, and a lot of sagebrushes. My best friend Courtney had invited my brother, Austin, and myself out to move cattle from one field to another and maybe explore a little bit. Get some roping practice in while we were at it too. So, early on Saturday morning, we hooked up to the trailer, loaded horses, and spent the weekend doing what we loved most. We got out to the ranch at about 6 a.m., got the horses saddled and ready to go. But my mare seemed incredibly on edge upon our arrival. She's typically pretty even-tempered, although she's got a bad attitude. She'll always do what's asked. We started our morning by moving all the pregnant mamas to a field closer to the barn. It could have gone a lot better, but all of our horses had no interest in being there for some reason, and I would soon find out why. After a rough morning, we decided to get loose and rope. We took 8 steers down to the arena, which was quite a ways away, but worth every second. By the time our shoulders were sore, and we had had our fill of throwing ropes, it was 1 in the afternoon. The arena we were at was about 0.5 mile from a river that just so happened to have an abandoned church with a rather dark past on its other side. The detail will be more important later, but keep it in mind. As I had said before, I'm a very spiritual person, and so is Courtney. Before coming out, we had prepared some stuff for our horses. For my mare and Courtney's, I had taken rosemary, lavender, and made a tea. I soaked strips of yellow ribbon, naturally leaving it overnight, and set it out under a full moon. I also had my salt that I gathered myself in the salt flats of Utah, charcoal, and eggshells ground into a fine powder. I used this to draw protective residuals on my horse, as if the ribbon braided into her mane and tail wasn't enough. Call me paranoid, but I had spent enough time on reservations and the woods to know that spooky things and evil spirits prowl everywhere. I want to clarify, we did not do this for Austin's horse. Being the religious individual he is, he told us, there was absolutely no way we were putting any of that witchy mumbo-jumbo on his horse. With the actual work being done and practice finished, we wanted to explore the area. It was a wonderful place with frost-covered trees and practically untouched snow. We wanted to see every inch of it. There was a trail that ran alongside the mountain we thought would be a perfect one to go explore, so we could get an overlook of the area and maybe a few cool pictures for Instagram. You had to go over the river's bridge, past the church, and go up the roadways to get to this trail. So we hopped back on and headed that way. This is where it starts to get complicated. I had said the horses were a handful already. Little did I know they had a lot more in store for us. Approaching the river, Courtney's little red mare went ballistic, refusing to go even one step closer to the water. It kept backing up to the tree line. I looked to my left to see Austin having his rodeo. He wasn't a stranger to it, thankfully enough. Rebel, his horse, was a half-crazy, off-track thoroughbred he repurchased 4 months from a kill. I wanted to help, but it wasn't easy, considering the road was iced over, and I didn't feel like hitting the ground myself. Amid the mild chaos, I caught the faintest smell of rotting flesh. Incredibly odd, considering everything is frozen. But that didn't occur to me until much later. I figured that smell was the reason for the horse's outburst, so we turned back and headed back to the area where the arena was. We were all a bit mad at the situation and agreed to call it a day. The plan was for the horses to stay here for the night. We 3 stay over at Courtney's and return for them in the morning. Simple enough, right? So we got everyone settled for the night. Water, food, and because I have trust issues, I always padlock the gate to my horse corral. Courtney's dad had come out to pick us up and we all went to our family friend's house for dinner. His name was Ellis, and he was a great cook. Over dinner, we discussed our day and our troubles at the river. Austin explained most of that story, but Ellis became unsettled when I chimed in with the detail about that nasty smell. He went on to tell me the lore about the area and exactly what had happened at the abandoned church so many years ago. Courtney and I were utterly immersed, Austin not so much. He thought it was hogwash, so he stepped out to the front porch to call his girlfriend. After being told all of this, I was very unsettled and wanted to check on my horse one last time before we headed out for the night. I asked Courtney's dad if I could borrow his truck to drive the mile down the road. Without hesitation, he tossed me the keys and said, "Don't wreck it, or you'll be walking back to my house." I laughed and went to walk out. Ellis nearly flipped his chair. He jumped up so fast, "Young lady, you think you're going out there alone?" I sheepishly replied, "Well, yes, sir, it's just down the road." He refused to allow it. So I threw my hat at Courtney and said, "Pitter-patter, our ponies are waiting." Walking out the door, we saw Austin sitting on the porch swing, whistling a tune, and I snapped at him instead, aggressively telling him, "Are you stupid? Whistling at night? You know what that invites." Frustrated, he stood up and rolled his eyes, telling us, "You know you're only freaking yourselves out with that stuff. It's not real." I chuckled at him and told him, "You say that now, until someday my silly little rocks and plants are the only thing keeping you safe from the monsters under your bed." He walked back inside with another roll of his eyes. Courtney took the driver's seat, so I hopped into the passenger seat of her dad's blue F-250. After dark, the temperature had dropped dramatically, making the rough dirt road an ice rink. We could go no more than 5 miles per hour. We didn't care too much, though. It just gave us more time to sing along to the radio. Being 16-year-old drivers, we sped up too much and got the truck sideways. Finally coming to a stop, we had slid right in front of the church in that old set of creepy woods. Dramatic, I know, but you can't make this stuff up. Laughing that we nearly wrecked the truck when Courtney's dad had joked about it just a few minutes before, we let the vehicle idle for just a minute while we gathered our composure. We were in the middle of the road, sure, but we were in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees and a creepy church. What more could go wrong? We had the high beams on, and I'm not entirely sure what compelled me to do it, but I found my eyes wandering toward the church. Nothing was all too exciting until I could see what almost looked like a pair of red eyes. Not the bright, menacing red most people would describe. The only way I can describe it is it was almost a deep auburn color and it wasn't glowing. Just simple red eyes staring right through me. They were so high up, too. I tried to rationalize. Maybe it's a mountain lion in a tree or a weird big elk. I can't see it all that well. I can't see it. My forgetful self once again forgetting my glasses. That's when I smelt it again. That terrible, awful, rotten meat smell. I stared, intently trying to make anything out. I nearly launched Courtney back into her seat and told her to hurry up. I needed to make sure my baby was okay. She must have seen the same thing I did because she had lost all color in her face. She stomped on the gas, but nothing was happening. Just as I was about to tell her to stop, the truck launched forward and smacked my forehead against the dash, enough to hurt but nothing more. I gave my friend a sarcastic, "Ouch," followed by a well-deserved eye roll that would have put Austin to shame. We finally pull into the arena parking lot to find our horses unhurt but completely freaked out. None of them had touched their food, all drenched in sweat. They looked like they had walked out of a horror movie. I was completely uncomfortable with the situation, and I didn't want to leave them there overnight. But it was late, and not to mention I was in the middle of the woods with icy roads, and to get a trailer out there would be a nightmare. I'm not sure where I gathered the courage, but I jumped out of the truck and ran to my horse. I tried my absolute best to calm her down, kissed her, told her how sorry I was and promised to get her as soon as the sun came up. Then I took off my obsidian necklace and tied it to her ribbon that I had braided into her mane that morning. Courtney called me crazy for leaving the truck safety, but I felt awful for them staying out there. We made it back to Ellis's house, where we couldn't explain everything to him fast enough. We were angry at him for letting us go out. I then received a rather lengthy lecture about getting out of the vehicle and how bad it could have been. But it was 11 p.m. When Courtney's dad told us to pick them up so we could head out, we piled into the 250 and drove the 45 minutes to Courtney's house. We nearly fought over the shower, but eventually all of us got the chance to wash away the day's filth. At 12:30 a.m., we finally went to bed. Courtney and I slept in the bed together, and Austin got booted to the floor, where he made his own little nest under the window. Sometime around 3:07 a.m., I am woken up by Austin nudging me. "Tristan, if you're going to fart like a dog, go poop outside like one." I was confused and angry for being woken up. Then I smelt it. The same smell from the river. I swear it burns the hair right from your nose. I was so tired I didn't care. I took a light swing at Austin and told him to go back to his dog bed on the floor. Right back to sleep I went. 3:32 a.m. Tap, tap, tap. I wake up thinking to myself, this is the night I kill my brother. Tap, tap, tap. I get out of bed to find him sound asleep in his spot. That smell was still in the air. I was starting to freak out, so I woke up Courtney. She smelt the same thing when she was awake enough to comprehend what was happening. Tap, tap, tap. She heard it too. We both knew whatever had been messing with the horses was now trying to do the same to us. We both got to moving, lighting black candles and burning sage. The moment the stage was lit, the tapping had stopped, and we heard the most gut-wrenching sound. It was almost like a woman and a goat and an injured bird trying to let out a sound all at the same time. This jarred Austin awake, and he shot right up. To see us standing there, hands full of candles and sage, he angrily stood up and began yelling, "This has gone too far. I don't know what type of weird stuff you're doing, but don't do it around me." He went to sleep on the couch after that. 3:50 a.m. rolls around. We finally settled down from the adrenaline rush and tried to salvage the last bit of time we had to sleep. 5 a.m., I woke up utterly exhausted, but I rolled right out of bed to get some coffee and dressed. I walked into the living room to find Austin still passed out on the couch. I started the coffee and politely woke up my brother, then wandered back into the room to do the same for Courtney. After she had gotten dressed, curiosity got the best of us and we went outside to see if whatever was tormenting us last night left any sort of evidence. Well, it did, that's for sure. There were deer tracks all around, but not any regular deer tracks. They were massive, and they appeared to be bipedal. I grew up in this area, and I know what deer tracks look like. These were just wrong. When we got up closer to the window, I felt my heart drop. I couldn't entirely move or talk or think for that matter. The necklace that I had tied to the ribbon on my horse's mane was now lying in the snow under the window. Courtney did not say a word. She just picked it up and grabbed me by my arm, and we walked inside. Immediately following that, we hooked up the trailer and got back to the arena as soon as possible. The truck had not even stopped when Courtney and I flung open the doors and went to the corrals. To my complete and utter relief, my horse and Courtney's were just fine. They never ate any of their hay, but they did appear to have calmed down a bit. I could see where the end of the yellow ribbon was significantly shorter than I had left it. Even odder was the padlock. It had been picked. Not opened, just unlocked. The gate hadn't even been swung open. The whole area was riddled with those identical deer prints as well. I knew, and Courtney knew it had been the same thing from the night before. Austin had kept Rebel a few stalls down from ours because they tended to try and fight. When we checked on Austin's horse, he had a slightly more disturbing sight than we all dealt with. Rebel was still wholly shaken up, but had minor cuts covering him from head to tail. It was nothing serious, but it was off-putting. There were also dents all over the panels that hadn't been there before. Austin was understandably upset about this and loaded him up really quickly and we got out of there. I don't really know what happened. There's a lot of times that we go to that area with no issues. It's rural, and I understand that the woods can hide a lot of interesting creatures. But sometimes, when I listen to the stories on the Swamp Dweller show, it reminds me of this weird encounter. And I sometimes think it was some sort of skimwalker, wendigo, crawler, whatever you want to call it.
So I've been listening for a while now to Swamp Dweller, as well as others, to see if anyone has had a similar experience. Some have experienced something vaguely similar, but not close enough. I have shared elsewhere to small local groups that were kind and understanding. Unlike my family, who still ridicules me for this. I'm in my mid-20s now, and this happened at age 12. But the groups would suggest stuff like skinwalkers or Bigfoot. If that's what this was, then it was horribly mutated or deformed. This, if it was not real, was the most vivid and convincing shared hallucination ever, as two of my friends witnessed it as well. I doubt I'll ever get them to share though, as one I lost contact with a couple years later when he moved, and the other is even more traumatized by it than I am. If I even mention it, he starts to enter fight or flight mode just from the thought. Sorry about the long intro, but I feel it is needed for clarity. Well, it was a warm day in the early summer just after school ended. My two friends and I were riding bikes just outside of town, kind of just exploring, when we came across a house that seemed clearly abandoned, yet still looked new. We thought briefly that maybe it wasn't actually abandoned, but after a while, we knew for sure it wasn't lived in, so we decided to check it out. It was actually very creepy to me. It was in excellent condition, but was totally empty of anything that wasn't built in. Although, there were also burnt and illicit drawings and movie cases, which my friends became preoccupied with, like it was a jigsaw puzzle. I was really weirded out with the whole deal, so I decided to go for a walk in the woods out back. Right outside was an old-school silver bullet-style trailer. Not sure if you'll know what I mean, but that's how I know to describe them. I opened the door, and it was absolutely full of all the missing household items, as if they planned to return for it but never did. It didn't seem that old, just had some slight dust gathering. Even more uncomfortable, I walked into the woods, as nature is very calming to me and I felt I needed to chill out. But this was very creepy to me too, so I walked for less than a minute. Then, out of nowhere, I felt extremely dazed and my vision became blurry. I can't tell what's what. Everything blended together. I'm not sure why I didn't stop. I just kept walking. After a while, not sure how long, everything clears up, and I'm beside a freshly built-looking barn. There seemed to be no real way for anything to get to this barn besides walking up, which confused me, as typically, a barn would need some kind of vehicle access to. So I decided to look inside, and as soon as I turned in the doorway, I'm greeted by the sight of a horse lying on its side, with this creature hunched over it. It stands on two human-like legs, except they were as big as smaller tree trunks, maybe 7 or 8 inches around, and its legs ended in stumps like an elephant. It was huge, towering above my dad's height of 6'6", and I stood there for a minute in pure terror, looking at this thing in broad daylight. Its shape was mostly human, as I said, but it was hairless, and had very light gray, very wrinkly, saggy skin. Its face lacked any features that a face normally has, besides two tiny black pinpricks that must have been eyes. Now I must say, at first I thought it was preying upon the horse, but I'm actually not sure what it was doing, as there was no blood or injury that I saw. I wasn't able to get a really good look though, before the creature strode towards me, almost casually. I, however, was finally not frozen with fear and ran back the way I came. The same feeling enveloped me, but the fear helped me keep sprinting until I made it back to the house and began screaming at my friends. They started to laugh at me, to which I replied, "Whatever, watch that window, it's coming. I'm out of here." But before I could take a step, they saw it emerge from the trees, screamed, and we all ran for our bikes and booked it. For years, we didn't speak about it, and still don't. The friend that's still here will only agree with what I saw. He won't speak of it himself, and never told his family. Also, a few years after this experience, I overheard someone that my friends and I didn't talk to. They were at a higher end of the social spectrum, and they were describing the same exact creature attacking their cows and carrying them off as if they were small game. Now, for the really creepy part. I Google mapped the area so that I could find out if the barn was part of another property and where it actually was. Upon looking further, though, it doesn't exist, and didn't then either. Right behind that house is enough of a tree line to block the view, but there's a neighborhood right behind those trees that I had been to before that experience. To end, believe it or not, hallucination or not, this happened to us. It felt as real as death, and I only wish to see if anyone else has seen or felt anything like this. Thank you all for your time and consideration.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This happened fairly recently. There is a conservation area that I used to like to walk in regularly. It's beside a golf course near an ordinary subdivision just off a busy road. It's popular with dog walkers and photographers. The conservation area is fairly well maintained and alerts its users that there are hidden cameras. My point in bringing up all of this is to say that by all accounts, this is a very safe, vanilla, urban wooded area in a populated area. One thing about me is that I like isolation to recharge. I dislike crowded trails and, by convention, go in off-peak hours. Or when the weather is unpleasant. Not dangerous, just unpleasant. Too cold, lightly raining, foggy, etc. I stay safe, but I like there to be as few people around as possible. In a city, in daylight, I don't feel like I'm taking any risk doing this. The first encounter, well, there was one day I went around 4 p.m. or so on a frigid, rainy Monday in November. On days like that, there are maybe only one or two dog walkers. But today, there was not a single car in the parking lot, except for a dirty blue pickup truck with a man sitting in it. I noticed that he was looking at me, but that didn't really bother me. I was just happy to see the trail was empty. On this particular day, I went to the area to practice my navigation skills. I was learning how to use a compass at the time, and it's good to practice that skill in an area you won't get lost in. So I decided to go off trail to a big pine plantation, which is pretty big. It's big, open, and has a large area of mature pine trees. If you're not familiar, definitely Google it. It's not a hiking area, or really that interesting in any way, but it's definitely off trail. You wouldn't get there unless you really wanted to get there, is what I'm saying. When I picked my first landmark in sight using my compass, and I'm pacing toward it, I find myself about halfway there when I hear rustling through the bushes. I turn around to see the man from the dirty blue pickup truck there, entering the pine plantation. This man is in his mid-50s. He's a little pudgy, wearing a baggy, beige cardigan and blue slacks. I feel pretty alert at this point, but this feels out of place somehow. I take note of it, but pretend to keep walking around with my compass, because I don't want to seem weird. I look at him side-eyed. He pretends to ignore me. I am getting really bad gut feelings about this whole situation. For some reason at this point, I feel like he is following me, but I have had an anxiety disorder my whole life, so I try not to freak out for no reason. And, of course, I don't want to ruin my relaxation time. Okay, so I'm calming down. No big deal. So, I pivot to see if he's following me, just 180 degrees, and walk toward the trail again. He's there, following me not too far behind. I walk through the bushes, onto the trail, and he's still following me. At this point, I was freaked out. The pine plantation entrance is only about 50 feet on the trail, so this guy would have to walk 50 feet, enter the pine plantation, then decide that that was it for the day? Bad odds. Definitely is following me. I quickly exit the trail, and when I'm leaving the parking lot, I see that he's still staring at me. I take the long way home. The experience freaks me out, and I only visit the area once before the second encounter. The second encounter was sometime in January. This time, I went to go bird watching. A week prior, I had seen an owl in the same pine plantation, I was practicing navigation again, and I wanted to see it. I had seen it about an hour before sundown, so I figured that there was definitely a chance that I could still see it, and it was a good time to go into the area. I checked the parking lot and there was no blue pickup truck, but there were two other cars with men. One was a red sedan with heavily tinted windows, and it looked like the other one was empty. So I go on the trail again. Today is muddy, wet, and cold. The area should be totally empty. Good. Unfortunately, it wasn't. So about 20 feet on the trail, I hear footsteps behind me. But of course it's not a crime, and I'll lose them soon when I go to the pine plantation. I'm sure you know where this is going. When I walk on the pine plantation, there is that same rustling of the bushes from before, and when I turn around, I see the same man. I feel a wave of terror and dread overcome me, alone in a muddy forest with a possible stalker. But it's still so calm, and it feels so mundane. To confirm my fears, I walk over to the area where I saw the owl last week and pause to look for it. Who do I see run next to me at the same time? It's the freaking guy from before. I am terrified at this point, and every part of me is screaming to run, so I walk as fast as I can to the trail again. I pass some other random guy in the same pine plantation and smile at him, and just totally on autopilot, he smiles back. It wasn't until I was in the parking lot that I get freaked out because there was a second person in the same pine plantation. Could they have been connected somehow? I stop briefly in the parking lot and take out a small notepad to quickly write down the license plate of the two cars. This gives the original man time to catch up to me in the parking lot. I am booking it out on foot out of the parking lot and he yells towards me, "Can I give you a ride?" And I just shake my head and keep walking. As I walk away, he begins to follow me in his car. He waits at the intersection to see which direction I'm going in, and I decide to walk in a busy park to lose him. He pulls into a nearby hidden driveway and stares at me, and takes out his phone and presumably takes a picture of me. He notes what direction I'm walking in, and does a U-turn and drives the other way. I of course took the long way home, filled out a police report, and the police opened up an investigation. I have not gone back to that conservation area since, and also I've lost my solidarity and love for the woods. This experience has definitely left me with an ongoing nervousness about being alone. Doubly more because I do not know who the second guy is. I walked by him so quickly I didn't really get much more than that he was mid-50s, had glasses, and was bald. The police unfortunately told me there's nothing they can really do at this point, so the best I can do is stay vigilant and try to not let it freak me out so much. Unfortunately, this has totally ruined my love for going out into the wilderness alone.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.